Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, or it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK World Radio Japan, France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. March 11th was the 13th anniversary of the Great Japan Earthquake and Tsunami, which devastated the Fukushima nuclear power plant. Since last August, diluted radioactive wastewater has been discharged into the Pacific Ocean. The Indian government has announced a controversial citizenship law allowing asylum from neighboring countries while excluding Muslims. NHK Japan.
It's been 13 years since the Great East Japan Earthquake and Tsunami. The disaster killed thousands and triggered a major nuclear accident which has yet to be resolved. People around the country observed a moment of silence on Monday at the exact time the quake struck. The magnitude 9.0 quake struck at 2:46 p.m. off the coast of the Tohoku region. It generated tsunami waves more than 10 meters high, devastating Japan's Pacific coast. Authorities say over 22,000 people went missing or were killed, including those who died as a result of circumstances caused by the disaster. The destruction forced hundreds of thousands more from their homes. Even now, over 29,000 people still cannot return. The tsunami also surged into the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, causing a triple meltdown. Last year, the plant's operator, the Tokyo Electric Power Company, or TEPCO, began discharging treated and diluted water from the facility into the sea. The International Atomic Energy Agency has found the release consistent with international safety standards. Now, TEPCO is hoping to remove fuel debris from the reactors. It's said to be their biggest challenge, and the operation was recently delayed for the third time. TEPCO is aiming to completely decommission the site by 2051, but multiple setbacks have thrown that timeline into question. The Indian government has announced it'll enact a controversial citizenship law. It enables people fleeing from 3 neighboring countries to apply for citizenship in India, with the exception of Muslims. Government officials say the Citizenship Amendment Act will provide minorities persecuted on religious grounds in Pakistan, Bangladesh, and Afghanistan a pathway to citizenship. They say Prime Minister Narendra Modi has realized his promise to Hindus, Sikhs, Buddhists, Jains, Parsis, and Christians from those countries. The law was passed in 2019, but critics say it was discriminatory against Muslims. It was not enacted after sparking widespread protests that resulted in deadly clashes. Protests broke out on Monday after the announcement of the law's implementation in the northeastern state of Assam. Demonstrators claim the law may increase migration from Bangladesh to their state. Members of opposition parties have also expressed their disapproval, saying the law divides people, undermines the constitution, and breaks from India's secular spirit. Enacting the law has been one of the key promises of Modi's ruling Bharatiya Janata Party. Members of the benefiting religious minorities were seen celebrating the government's announcement. India's general elections, which are due by May, are expected to be announced in the coming days. Critics are questioning the timing of the law's enactment and are accusing the government of trying to influence voters and to polarize the elections.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They are heard at 10 p.m. at 11735. That's a new frequency, 11735, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK is also available at most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, France 24. Neither the European Union nor France has made adaptations for the evolving climate change. What preparations are needed to cope with the increasing temperature and their effects on humans, the land, and agriculture? France 24.
Well, as humanity moves far too slowly to stem the tide of climate chaos, new analysis has exposed holes in both European and French climate adaptation. A French public finance watchdog has published a new report, publishing that today, saying it regretted an absence of exhaustive and coherent budgeting of what that adaptation would require. We're going to talk more about that now with Antonia Kerrigan, who joins me on the set. Antonia, now, there have been two major reports this week, this French report as well as the EU report, both on climate adaptation and preparedness. What exactly does that mean?
Well, so when we talk about climate action, it's important to know that that breaks out down into two major categories. You've got mitigation. That's the efforts we make to reduce our emissions, slow and prevent global warming. And then there's adaptation, and that is recognising that a certain amount of damage is done and that we need to now adapt our societies, our industries, our agriculture and our lifestyles to live with what has now become inevitable. And that includes protecting the economy, protecting quality of life and also protecting things like public health. And it can be a range of actions. It can involve things like resourcing hospitals, better training health professionals to handle things like heat stress. It can also be things to do with urban planning. It can be not building our critical infrastructure on areas that are either floodable now or that could be floodable in 20 years. Also training more firefighters as wildfires ravage the forests across Europe, for instance. Not just a European problem, also a global problem. Agriculture is a big one too. It's all about developing the future agriculture that has to be less water intensive, despite the temptation to irrigate more and more, of course, in these ever more frequent droughts. So, yeah, adaptation is one of the two major axes of climate action.
Now, today there was this fairly damning report on where France stands on its climate adaptation measures. Tell us a bit more about France's specific issues.
Well, so France obviously faces a heightened flood risk in the north. The IPCC report of last year put the Hauts-de-France region in quite a scary territory, whereas in the rest of the country, it's much more exposed to longer and ever-intensifying heat waves every summer. The verdict by the Cour des Comptes, this Auditor General, is that the evaluation of future and current adaptation costs is patchy, not to say inexistent, lacking sufficient data, and sometimes even clear objectives. That's extremely damning. The kinds of things they point to specific actions that are needed and that they say haven't been fully accounted for in terms of future development on these issues. A need to, for instance, protect lives, livelihoods, and quality of life through actions like upgrading homes. They say the vast majority of French homes are not suitable for France's future climate, with much more heat wave, much higher temperatures, especially for the elderly, for instance, who are at high risk of illnesses like heat stress. They also talk about upgrading energy infrastructure. France depends 63% on nuclear, which has its virtues. It's low carbon. However, a huge amount of cooling infrastructure is already needed and will certainly be needed in the future as the mean temperature rises and these extreme heat episodes also hit for longer periods every year. They also talk about upgrading the electrical grid, which is not set for the sort of climate of the 2020s, 2030s and 2040s. Then there's also agriculture. Now, agriculture is extremely strategic for food security. It's also extremely economically important in France. And it comes back to this idea that there is good and bad adaptation. The sort of emergency measure is lots of irrigation, the construction of mega basins, which are these artificial lakes that farmers can then draw on to water their crops in sort of drought emergency moments. But what we really need to be doing is developing better, more resilient crops and changing farming practices in a deeper way, this report says. One quite frightening statistic that's not new, but regarding coastal erosion. Now, 20% of France's coast is affected by coastal erosion, and the bill is absolutely whopping. So it was 14 million in 2021, 48 million in 2023, and according to this new report, it could be in the billions by 2050. That's huge amounts of money that the Cour des Comptes says the French government has not been planning for correctly. And then there's this instance where, of course, adaptation, or the lack of adaptation, is threatening mitigation, is going to make France, in short, a bigger net emitter of CO2 than it should be. And that's the threat posed to forests. Now, we depend on forests to act as carbon sinks, but they are absorbing less and less carbon. 58 million tonnes of CO2 in the French forests were absorbed in 2010, only 30 million in 2021. So you can see a massive reduction in the efficacy of these carbon sinks. The government put 250 million euros on the table to restore 10% of the national forests. The Cour des Comptes says it's not enough as we face ever more fires, drought, and plagues of insects.
That report was from France 24. France 24 may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, and at most podcast sites. On to Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. The International Environment Agency says that a near-record high release of methane was observed last year. Relief supplies to Gaza have been bombed by Israel. Failed attempts to curb the starvation in Gaza, like airdrops and the yet-to-arrive ships, are necessary because truck deliveries are being blocked in Israel by civilian protesters. Turmoil in Haiti has grown. The U.S. and Caribbean nations want to appoint a new government, and there are organized gangs controlling the capital. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
The International Energy Agency says methane emissions from the energy sector hit a near record high last year. Large methane plumes, like you see there, from leaky fossil fuel infrastructure jumped by 50% compared with 2022. Methane is responsible for around a third of the rise in global temperatures since pre-industrial times. International efforts to get humanitarian aid into Gaza are ramping up. A second ship is preparing to sail from Cyprus to the Gaza Strip, loaded with supplies. A first ship carrying about 200 tons of food is just hours away from landing. Large parts of Gaza have been devastated since Israel launched its military offensive in response to the October 7th terror attacks by Hamas.
The aftermath of months-long fighting in Khan Yunis. Palestinians are slowly returning to this residential complex, now in ruins, as Israeli ground forces withdrew from the area. Most of them have lost their homes and have loved ones missing.
I ran to bring food and water for my children to feed them. My husband is not here. He was taken by the army. Unfortunately, I found the whole tower gone and on fire, as you can see.
Further south in Rafah, the UN agency helping Palestinian refugees said their aid facility was hit by Israeli forces. The Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry says several people were killed and dozens wounded.
This is forbidden. We're an international institution. All of this is for people. We stopped returning to our homes. We work day and night to serve refugees. It's forbidden. Look, what is this? We take all of this to the elderly and children. What is this?
The attack has compounded the despair of many Gazans who are already suffering amid severe shortages of food and basic supplies.
People came here to get aid, to get food, to get their daily meals. It's Ramadan. How can they bombard us during the month of Ramadan?
Israel is facing criticism for allegedly blocking humanitarian aid deliveries into the Gaza Strip, a claim Israeli authorities have repeatedly denied. The UN is warning of the imminent risk of famine.
Meanwhile, the UN is warning of widespread famine in Gaza, with one in four people facing starvation as food deliveries struggle to get through. The majority of aid trucks cross through Rafah on Egypt's border with Gaza, but heavy bombardment is hampering efforts. Following US pressure, Israel opened the former goods crossing at Kerem Shalom, as well as an inspection station at Nitzana. Both have been blocked by Israeli protests. DW's Rebecca Ritters reports now from the port city of Ashdod.
This port should be processing much-needed food donations for Gaza, but it's not. The Israeli government is in a battle with UNRWA, the agency tasked with distributing the aid, and has blocked its passage.
Shipping containers of rice, flour, chickpeas and even cooking oil, enough to feed more than a million people for about a month, are stuck here in the port city of Ashdod, less than 70 kilometres from Rafah and the people who so desperately need it.
These people are making it even harder for aid to get through. The group of Israeli protesters are at the Nitzana border crossing with Egypt, trying to stop the trucks that are brought here for Israeli inspection. French-Israeli Rachel Tuitu was among one of the first to take action. She helped form a group called SAV9 and says its support is growing.
We started up a month ago. We were 50 people protesting. Now we are on our greatest day. We were 400, and it's been only 5 weeks. The fuel is what is very problematic for Israel. We're fighting Hamas, and on the second hand, we are giving him the fuel to continue to fight us, to alimentate the tunnels, the terror tunnels, the aeration system, and the electricity.
In a statement to DW, UNRWA says there's no evidence of systemic diversion of aid in Gaza by Hamas or any other armed groups. SAV9 claims to represent a cross-section of Israeli society, but most people at this protest wore distinct clothing of far-right and religious activists. Though surveys suggest blocking aid is a majority opinion. With international pressure on the government to allow aid in, these protesters say they're doing what the government can't.
Everybody here in Israel is mourning the losses that we've had to endure in Gaza. And on the second hand, our government is giving in to international pressure and is giving out the humanitarian aid to our enemy.
Their attempts have proved successful, not in completely preventing aid transfer, but certainly hampering its flow.
Somewhere between 1 and 200 trucks full of aid are supposed to come through here, get processed by the Israeli authorities before heading back up to Rafah and crossing into Gaza. We haven't seen any be processed today. None have come through. The protesters say, though their numbers are small, it's because of them that the crossing has been closed.
A good day for the protesters, who say they'll keep up their civil disobedience for as long as it takes. While they protest, the situation for civilians in Gaza gets more desperate by the day.
More protests have broken out in Haiti over a plan by Caribbean nations to revamp the country's leadership. On Wednesday, demonstrators tried to block busy streets in the capital, Port-au-Prince. They say they are opposed to foreigners interfering in the country's politics. U.S. and Caribbean officials want to appoint a new transitional government for the country. Haiti's prime minister has promised to resign. The European Union, meanwhile, says that it will send humanitarian aid worth 20 million euros to the country. Haiti is the Caribbean's third largest country and is bordered to the east by the Dominican Republic. It is no stranger to unrest, but with gangs now in control of much of the capital, there are fears that the nation could spiral into a wider civil war.
This man is increasingly calling the shots in Haiti. Gang leader Jimmy Cherizier, nicknamed Barbecue. A former police officer, he's a brutal mobster who has voiced admiration for Haiti's former dictatorship. He heads up an alliance of gangs called the G9. Gang violence has killed thousands in Haiti. He says he's fighting for the poor and against government corruption. But in reality, gang turf wars have forced hundreds of thousands from their homes, cut off food supplies, and fueled a humanitarian crisis. Haiti is desperately poor. Many are still living in makeshift accommodation put up after the devastating earthquake in 2010. That quake killed more than 200,000 people, according to government figures. At the time, Haiti had only been a democracy for 20 years and lacked a stable government. A hurricane followed, destroying more homes. With a lack of law and order, gangs began to flourish. In 2017, Jovenel Moïse was elected president. His government is said to have supported Cherizier and the G9 gangs. So all the while, the gangs were growing stronger. But 4 years later, in 2021, President Moïse was assassinated, triggering Haiti's descent into chaos. That was when Ariel Henry took over as acting prime minister. He promised to hold presidential elections, but repeatedly postponed the ballot. In the power vacuum, gang violence increased, and Henri's government steadily lost control. Protesters called for Henri to step down. Then, in September last year, Cherizier seized the initiative.
We are launching a fight to overturn Henri's government in any way possible.
At the end of February, the G9 gangs seized control of Haiti's international airports, while Henri was abroad. It effectively barred his return. It's not clear if Cherizier has his own ambitions for power. But what is clear, any new government in Haiti will have to deal with the gangs, who are a force to be reckoned with.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary, as well as at most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the Shortwave Report or could help support this listener-funded program, like a longtime supporter in Willits, California did this week, my PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Your donations help the weekly production and distribution of this show, which is supplied without cost to more than 100 radio stations around the world. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. The Speaker of the Lower House of the Russian Parliament said that nations supporting the extradition of Julian Assange to the U.S. will cease to be legal. The United Nations Relief Agency has called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Nations that support the extradition to the United States of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange will lose their legality, warned today the Speaker of the Lower House of the Russian Parliament, Vyacheslav Volodin. Quote, in 2016, the United Nations called Assange's detention arbitrary. His extradition would be a gross violation of the European Convention on Human Rights, including freedom of expression. If Assange's extradition occurs, nations supporting it will cease to be legal, Volodin asserted on his Telegram account. On the assumption that the WikiLeaks leader was about Russia or China instead of the United States, in the parliamentary leader's view, Assange would be seen as a, quote, champion of truth and freedom. Quote, the situation around this person is an example of vileness, lies and double standards of Washington, London and Brussels, the State Duma head said. Hearings in London's High Court on Assange's appeal against his extradition to the American nation occurred on February 20th and 21st, but the court's decision has not yet been announced. WikiLeaks was founded by Assange in 2006, but rose to fame in 2010 when it began publishing large-scale leaks of classified government information, particularly from the United States. In 2010, for example, secret material was published on its website, in which it could be seen that at least 1,818 civilians are killed after an attack launched in 2007 by a U.S. military helicopter in Baghdad. In the same year, the publication of 250,000 diplomatic documents of the United States began. Assange has been held in Belmarsh Prison, southeast of London, since he was arrested on April 11, 2019, at Washington's request. This after 7 years in the Ecuadorian embassy in the United Kingdom for fear of being extradited to the United States. The United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees has warned of the tragic situation in the northern Gaza Strip, calling for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in the besieged territory within the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan. The United Nations Relief Works and Agency, the UNRWA, made the warning in a post on X on Sunday as the Israeli regime continues to deny UN aid agencies the ability to deliver in the northern part of Gaza despite repeated calls. Quote, Ramadan is approaching. Death toll continues to rise, unquote. The UNRWA said, addressing the need for humanitarian access across Gaza and an immediate ceasefire to save lives. The Israeli military has restricted the delivery of humanitarian supplies to northern Gaza for weeks, and thousands of children are going without sufficient food and medication. The United Nations has already warned that child deaths will, quote, rapidly increase in Gaza if humanitarian aid do not immediately increase, unquote. The UNRWA has also warned about more child deaths in the Gaza Strip amidst a widespread lack of food and access to safe water and medical supplies. Hamas says humanitarian aid airdrops do not meet even 1% of demand for aid in Gaza. A senior official of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas's airdropping of humanitarian aid is, quote, useless as the raids are not sufficient. Ismail Al-Wabta, who also serves as head of the information office of Hamas in Gaza, said on Monday that the United Nations, which has been behind a number of aid drops into Gaza in recent weeks, had better help open border crossings in Gaza to deliver badly needed food and medicine to the territory. Al-Wabta said some 1.2 million children in Gaza are facing a catastrophic situation. This because of months of Israeli blockade and war and the hunger that has been caused by it. Figures provided by Hamas show more than 31,000 people have been killed in the territory.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, although there are no podcasts. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. There's a new frequency in there. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You will have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. This shortwave report, which is now in its 27th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 26 years, the shortwave report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. While I am recuperating from spinal surgery, I'm staying in a house that is connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.